Hello and welcome to this week's Premier League bound Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB and of course on our podcast. I'm Ady Packham and putting the Premier League badges on our sleeves is of course OldFootballShirts.com. Well, we've done it. And bearing in mind, 20 years ago this week, we went into a final game at the Goldstone with an uncertain future, with no ground, and not even knowing if we would have a club to support the next season. It certainly is something to celebrate. It's been a long journey, and we now know that we're going to be dining at the top table of English football for the first time in 34 years. We couldn't quite clinch the title last night up at Norwich, but we have a chance to see a beard of bees lifting the trophy at the Amex next Saturday that would launch another county-wide celebration. Joining me as we look back on this fantastic last week is, of course, Alan Wares, because he's always here, as is Andy Bass, and pretty much as is Marcus Hancock.
The band has got back together.
The band is back together. I know. I don't know what kind of a boy band we'd actually make, but having heard what we were just singing before we went on air, I don't think we're going to be singing any records anytime soon.
No worse than you'll get on in the hit parade these days.
But, I mean, we were certainly on the brink of something there, I'm pretty sure of that. Okay, well, guys, welcome back into the studio. It's been quite one hell of a week, really, isn't it? Marcus, how was your celebrations?
No idea.
Yeah, I forget. Which part did you want to hear about?
What bit can you tell
us
about?
Celebration before we actually clinched promotion, or the bit where we sort of got promotion on goal difference? Because there's kind of two celebrations.
Well, I keep saying it was Saturday. It was on a Monday, wasn't it? It just feels a bit mad.
It does feel like a Saturday because of the bank holiday. Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, it was. The whole of the Amex celebrations. It was just completely and utterly looping.
Well, it just went on for about sort of 2 hours. I mean, there was the whole thing of the original pitch invasion. Once we sort of finally fallen over the line against Wigan. For all the clubs saying, please don't run onto the pitch.
Well, that was it. I think that was my favourite part of the day when they were doing their Tony Bloom and Barber were doing their.
Oh, Barber, you have no control over us.
Well, trouble is with us West Upper types, you know, I did think about sneaking in and installing a zip wire for us for when that moment came.
But I mean, it was when Barber was doing his bit, and the first thing he said was, well, my plea to keep people off the pitch went well, didn't it?
You knew that was always going to be the case. But then, you know, there's the celebrations, and then out come the players, half-naked men all sitting on Johnny Cantor and Warren Aspinall's lap. I know that they've got pink faces in the first place. I mean, they're positive in amyl nitrate after that. It was a sight to behold. And the way that the players interacted with the fans was absolutely fantastic. And then we were kind of, a lot of people stuck around. I mean, Barbara said 25,000. All I know is there was a lot of people that stuck around. They were celebrating while the Huddersfield Derby game was going on. I didn't realise there were so many people in the North Sound concourse who came sort of piling out afterwards. We had a go at doing a Facebook Live in the stadium where the commentary was going on.
It took a long time for us to actually do that. It's still actually available over on our Facebook page, but we managed to catch up with Cooldale after the game.
That was the thing that really took a long time. He came back into the West Stand lower to come and find us, and it must have been a good 20 minutes where he just got bombarded with people wanting to do selfies. Understandable, but we didn't really factor that in, did we?
From the west upper where to the east east lower where we actually sorry from the west lower to the
yeah,
east
yeah,
lower
yeah.
It took about an hour for us to
it
actually
was a long time.
Actually get it going
always, but it was just I mean as soon as people saw Cowdy come into the west lower straight afterwards while they were watching the game in the north stand, it seemed quite empty. It was probably a couple of hundred people, and as soon as they said it was flies around a honeypot. It really was. You know, there were the lair in no time, and it just goes to show that I think there's also an appreciation. We know that Cowdy is loved anyway, but it also shows just how much appreciation there is for those who played a major part of the journey. I mean, so much of the media stuff since we've got promotion has been about the journey, the 20 years ago that you mentioned at the top of the show, all this sort of stuff, and we know that, you know, in our case, Cowdy was one of those who played a major part of that journey. He was there for a quarter of that journey.
I mean, we were talking to him whilst he when the was it with the equaliser when the final whistle went?
No, it was both.
It was, and the sheer joy and in his face was just fantastic, wasn't it, Andy?
That was absolutely brilliant because our good friend Jamie was getting his Cowdy selfie at the exact moment that Derby scored, and the elation on both their faces is absolutely fantastic. I mean, what an incredible day. It was non-stop celebration. I liked the fact that it was like almost a double celebration immediately after the game, and then after the confirmation with the Derby result, which was just terrific.
Okay, does anyone actually remember the game?
Yes.
I do actually. I mean, it's relatively sober. I mean, I think it's probably important for a lot of people. It is going to be one of those days where you can remember so much about it, and also, you know, possibly maybe want to forget one or two bits of it. I liken it, and I did actually ask this of a couple of people, and I'm going to throw this over to you three, because I'm not sure if I have asked you, is which was the bigger day? Monday, where we clinched promotion, or rewind to 6th of August 2011? Which for you was a kind of a bigger day? Which is more important?
You know what, I've actually been thinking about this week, and I think Monday finally bumped the opening day out of my top Albion moments.
Good.
And it's taken a long time to do that, because I particularly never forget the Buckley's winner against Doncaster. I think it's always going to be one of my top sporting moments. But really, this was something I'd never experienced before. I mean, it was just everything was just going through every single pore of everybody in there. That, you know, people who were around 20 years ago, people who weren't even born in 20 years ago, and just a magical day. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, if we go up and down again, it will never be that day will never be replicated. This was the defining moment, because this closed the chapter of all that misery that went on before it, and this was like the culmin. This is the joyous Hollywood ending that we you know, that you just can't make it up.
Marcus,
for me, first game at Amex, for me personally, the game in August, because for me that was a bit like Hollywood ending for me, sort of thing. Having stood at Gillingham, seen, you know, Goldstone, this is a celebration, so let's not rake over that yet. I'm sure we will, but for me, that will always stand as probably number one or two in the Albion moments, other than Hereford away. For me personally, having been right at the bottom, and no disrespect to Andy, I know he came to, he's been a long-standing with Dean season ticket holder, but he hasn't probably been as gnarled and grizzled as some of us have over the years. And absolutely. He's wearing his Albion scarf today, so he's But at the same time, I don't mean to say for people like Andy in a disingenuous way, but for the guys who've been around, but for me personally, it has to be the first day at the Amex, because that topped probably nearly everything.
What about you, AD?
It's a strange one, because I don't really think you can compare the two, because I mean the clinching promotion in the way that we did it. I mean, of course, it was a massive, massive, amazing celebration and an outpouring of emotion. But I mean, obviously, the first game at the Amex was just the drama, and the fact that the goals were scored in the 83rd and 97th minute.
Very,
which is
Hollywood, though, again.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely, and
Hollywood at that.
As moments, I think they are both
Jason
obviously.
Statham scored they're stand.
they're both obviously the Doncaster game. Obviously, that was the sporting drama.
Yeah.
And the promotion, it was just relief and
so which okay if you can't compare, all right, if I don't, which is better, the apple or the orange?
I had an orange this morning,
meaning question.
Can you make alcohol out of orange juice? Yes, you can. I would probably go with the first game at the Amex originally, but I mean, because it was, this has been, I mean, has been a long time coming, and the symmetry of the fact that it is 20 years since the last game at the Goldstone, it is just so important. And as we've all been saying in various other interviews and other shows we've done this week, we cannot forget what happened 20 years ago.
Absolutely. I think it also is a case of the fact that as the season was coming to a close, it was always going to happen, whether it be the Wigan game, whether it be Norwich, whether it be Bristol City, whether it be. So whilst it was an amazing celebration,
we kind of knew it was coming.
Always going to be there, whereas the Amex was so bloody dim and distant for years. I mean, literally, you know. I think that is a.
I mean, when you look back to Monday, when you look back to Monday, I mean, there was all sorts of. Sideshows to it, and you know, the fact that Newcastle lost again, and the fact that Huddersfield didn't win.
Well, they were bonuses, weren't they?
It was just like,
okay, let me ask this other question of you, of all of you three. I know how I felt. How much sleep did you get the night before?
Same as usual, to be honest. Not much.
I mean, were you kind of sort of like, did it take you a while to drift off?
No, not really, because I'd had quite a heavy Sunday.
Who knew?
So I was really tired.
Same here,
but I did wake up early again. So in that sense, probably I was probably a couple of hours shy. But I was excited about the. I was glad I had a busy Sunday to take my mind off off the Monday, because otherwise I'd have just been, I don't know, sitting at home watching. The 15 years or YouTube videos or something, and just, I mean, like getting myself into a frenzy.
The point is there are parallels with this. I mean, we can rewind back to 30th of July when the stadium opened. We can also rewind to the 6th of August when it was the first league game. And there was that air of that buzz, that crackle in the air of expectation. You know, in 2011, it was all about the stadium opening and a new chapter being written and what have you. And this is about a new chapter being written, but this one is actually probably about success. But the point I'm making is there was that same buzz. You see the flags, you see the bunting, you see everything out there. Is, you know, the town is, the city is actually pretty much painted blue and white. Mm. You know, the people who've painted their house in Viaduct Road. I mean, how cool is that? You know, it's that sort of thing. We even had a flag out here at Radio Reverb, but someone's taken it down. I don't know who. You know, there is a buzz about the place, and
it's what it means to the city as well, Marcus.
Absolutely, and I've even seen little places of CPFC graffitied around as well. I don't know whether that's new or whether
that's in the toilets. They go on the bog rolls.
But no, you're absolutely right. It's been really good to see. I don't know who nicked your flag, though. I must admit.
Well, I've got it. I just someone took it down. it was just put in the back office here, and you know. Hashtag unhappy, but no, it's the whole buzz around the city. It's those that are doing their little bit to pile in and make sure that the team know they're supported, and they've come across, they've reciprocated, and I'm sure we'll talk about it presently. But the celebrations of the players with the fans
let's have a quick look over the game itself achieve the promotion, because it was let's talk about Wigan's kit, actually, because there was a clash, wasn't there?
There was a bit. I mean, it's blue against, I don't know. What
kind of green.
I mean, I'm looking at. Yeah,
is it aquamarine kind of, or something?
Turquoisey. I mean, poor Phil Shelley wouldn't have had a chance, would he? well, probably, obviously, let's put it this way. What Wigan would have mostly been looking at was the back of a white shirt. They wouldn't have been looking at the blue and white stripes too much, because. I suppose down on pitch level is obviously totally different. When you're looking down on a green pitch, a sort of like aquamarine turquoise, mucky sick colour against the stripes, it's going to clash a bit.
Mm. But I mean, it was. I mean, Wigan weren't all that great, were they? Let's be honest. It took a while to break them down with that first chance. But it was a fantastic move that started with Dale Stevens on the edge of our box, and he laid off to Dunk, who launches a long ball forward towards Hamed, who heads back towards Murray, who fires home from the edge of the box. Great. Great team goal.
Touch of route one about it, wasn't there?
Yeah, it would have done
matter. Textbook Albion goal, though. I mean, you know,
it just happened so quickly. Yeah. Front to back.
We quite often score quickly on the break. I think that's one of the reasons we've managed to turn lots of draws into wins this season. I think we've been a bit more opportunistic, a bit more ruthless in front of goal. I think Glenn Murray's got an awful lot to do with that. But it's nice how him and Hemed actually genuinely getting some sort of a partnership going as well now.
Yeah, because, I mean, Marcus, like they were saying at the beginning of the season and throughout the season that Murray and Hemed couldn't play together, but they're starting to, like, dovetail quite nicely at the moment. Obviously, that's because Baldock isn't available. But
yeah, I mean, it's a necessity, but at the same time, the longer you probably play together, the more your chance you've got of forming a partnership. And that's exactly what has happened. They've played now, what, 4 or 5 games together up front, maybe more? I forget, in a row as well. Not like, oh, you know, you play together for one game, then 6 games later you're together for another 20 minutes. And, you know, they've actually had a good 90 minutes or near enough for 4 or 5 games. So they're going to start to, you know, form an effective partnership.
I mean, how important, I mean, it's going to, like, state in the obvious pretty much, but how important was it signing Glenn Murray, obviously initially on loan? Because, I mean, Baldock and Hemed had a great partnership last year. They both was scoring a lot of goals. But Murray's is he that much better than Hemed, do you think?
Well, it's a box-ticking thing, really, isn't it? And the fella out of contract, not playing in his first team, lives locally, has an affinity to the place, even though not everyone has the same affinity towards him at the time.
I think they do now.
I'd hope so. I'd really hope so. I mean, it's pretty churlish to, you know, sort of still chastise him for being up the road. It was just something. And he wanted, as we understood it, he wanted to come, or Chris Hughton certainly wanted him last year. So, you know, it just made so much sense on so many levels. It was Eddie Howe being, well, Eddie Howe. That stopped him from coming here last year. So,
are you looking forward to reacquainting yourself with Mr. Howe next season now?
He's that horrible little sort of, you know, blue-eyed, blonde little squit. You just want to stamp on his lunchbox, don't you?
I don't like games against Eddie Howe's teams. No, they never really end well for us.
Seem to have the best refs, don't they?
Yeah.
But, I mean, OK, so we got the goal and then we started to enjoy ourselves and we created a few more chances in the game. I mean, there was...
Well, the thing is about about the whole performance was just how much we controlled it. We played, I think, certainly much in second gear. We kept the ball a hell of a lot. You know, if there wasn't anything that was open and ready and up for offer, you know, they kept the ball. And there was long periods of possession without actually doing a huge amount with it.
I think Wigan did stroke the ball around quite well, though, to be fair.
At times, but
they never threatened, to be fair, but they did, you know, they were knocking it about a bit. And you're like, oh, can we have it back now, please?
But there was the second goal came in the second half, and it was all to do with Anthony Knockhart's dancing feet, Andy.
Well, he had to do something, didn't he? After you know, it's kind of been the Knockhart show for the last week and a half, and he just literally danced through the defence, and then just pulls it back, puts it on a plate for Solly, who wellies it in.
He
tried to centre it, but it deflected off the Wigan defender too much.
Yeah. Yeah. So that programme you were talking about, the knock, was it called It's a Knockout?
Are we allowed to talk about that?
No.
But just a brilliant effort, and we were just like, yes, cheering him on when he was just like going to, go on, and then it's just. Like,
I mean, Solly still had quite a bit to do, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, he still sort of knocked it back. Well, it looked like the logical thing was to do was just smash it, but he saw that there was 2 or 3 defenders in front of him, and so just sort of dinked it round them and then sort of smashed it between the keeper's legs in a way that he really should have done better with. Was the other one, possibly the other programme, would be Opportunity Knockout?
How long have you been storing these up, Al? I mean, it's...
Apologies to listeners, this could be a very long show.
But I mean, we mentioned it earlier, but I mean, we always look at our most dangerous when we're breaking with pace.
Yeah.
Next. Sorry, I don't know if we'd noticed or not. We're doing our best, but we've been on the P1SS, haven't we, this week? So we're trying to do our best. With you know. Yes, we do break, and as soon as Knockhart's got the ball and he's legging it up the, you know, the right inside channel, you know full well the other team's in trouble.
But there was also in this game that Jamie Murphy came around. It was a great cameo from him.
Yeah. Next.
Tuba Akpom, though. Okay.
Yeah, he came on and wasn't so great.
That bloke has gone from villain to comedian, hasn't he? I
mean, yeah.
We'll talk about it, I'm sure, with the Norwich game from last night, but. Oh dear.
Okay. Well, the final whistle went. Obviously, they got the pull one back. Nervous for like 5 minutes.
It was a good goal. I thought we'd actually switched off. I mean, yeah. We allowed the cross to come in. We allowed the fellas to get ahead of Hunemeyer. Yeah. Not, you know, that was pretty sloppy. I mean, we'd bossed the game for 80 minutes. You know, they were just about getting back into it. But the point is, we still had. If we'd just gone up a gear you know, you'd like to think 2-0 up, 80 minutes cruising, you don't have to go up a gear, but they did and we didn't, and you know, we closed them out ultimately in the end. But yeah, we could have done that. That was, you know, if we're going to have a proper party, please don't do it with nerves jangling.
But the final whistle did went. That's good English, wasn't it? It goed.
It goed at a time when he thought that it was going to give a free kick. So you think, well, oh, it is the final whistle. And I could only tell it was a final whistle when I saw, I think it was Knockhart, doing his aeroplane thing around the pitch.
A couple of people mentioned that he actually blew a bit early.
So what?
Yeah, but the North Stand exploded onto the pitch and the party started.
Yeah, like I say, well done, Paul Barb, for trying to keep everyone on. To be honest, I do prefer it when they aren't on the pitch. Well, let's put it this way, assuming, I think you have to put it into context that if we do get the championship and against Bristol City, people will genuinely stay off the pitch on account of the fact that the players want to do a lap of honour, but they also have to set up this presentation thing on the pitch. And if they've got thousands of people on there doing that, you know, they're not going to do the presentation when there's anyone on the pitch. The Sky or the Football League or whoever it is, and then let's face it, the Football League couldn't organise a what's it in a brewery. If they're going to organise this sort of thing properly, they have to do it in their own stage managed way, in which case, you know, yeah, there might be a few people come on, but no, this one is, you know, Monday was about the fans and everyone and the players and the management. If we do it on Saturday against Bristol City, this is about the players. This is about us showing appreciation for the players in our particular place,
okay.
I think.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that shortly. But first, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. The show is brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and I have a shirt of the week, which I am just going to pass over. Who wants it?
Is it Newcastle?
It's not, no. I'll give it to Marcus. If you can just describe this shirt for me.
Oh, well, how about that? Oh, sorry, how about that? Well, it's a Brighton and Hove Albion shirt, everybody. What gave it away? Was it the seagull?
I think it was the tick.
Blue and white shirt. Yeah.
In Phil's words, iron-on transfer, tick, template plate.
It looks like it's a signed shirt this time.
If you look on the other bit as well.
Okay, here we go. Ah, right, it's a Steve Sidwell match-worn shirt.
More to the point, I think it's the one at Bristol City because it's got the poppy on the front. I think it's... Is it that one that he scored that
yes,
goal
it
of
is.
The season in? And Phil's got it?
Yes.
God.
What?
Blimey. Talk about showing off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, all right, Phil.
Yeah, all right. Look, we really thank you for your sponsorship and we do very much appreciate your support. And actually, you know, if it wasn't for Phil, I do have to say this, you know, we're getting to the end of the season. I do say this every time anyway. Phil and Mark, your support and sponsorship of the show is very, very much appreciated. We genuinely wouldn't be able to do this if you didn't put the financial support in that you do to it. We have to pay to be on Radio Reverb. We don't get any financial benefit from this. Phil is the one who actually fills in that gap for us, and Phil and Mark do, and we very much appreciate it. But you don't have to rub our noses in it for this one. I mean, that is... Go on, then.
Okay, well, here's what we've got to say. This is a shirt which I'm sure you all recognise. It's a 2016-17 shirt, home shirt of newly promoted Brighton and Hove Albion. This particular version of the shirt was worn by Steve Sidwell when he scored the championship goal of the season at Bristol City in November. You will note the poppy on the shirt, and it was auctioned off in aid of the Royal British Legion at that time. The shirt retains the traditional blue and white design, including a white back and red Nike swoosh with red numbers and lettering. It's a throwback to the 1978-79 season, which Peter Ward and his teammates wore on their way to winning promotion to the old First Division. Little did we know that this shirt would achieve the same result. Brighton play at the 30,750 capacity American Express Community Stadium, but 20 years ago this week, they were forced to leave our ancestral home, the Goldstone. After the game at Hereford, where our very existence hung in the balance, we were forced to play our home game 74 miles away in Gillingham. To put that into context, that's the equivalent of Crystal Palace playing their home games in Portsmouth or Liverpool having to play their home games at Shrewsbury. While we celebrate our promotion to the top table for the first time in 34 years, we must not forget where we came from.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would also say, if you want to say 75 miles, that would be the equivalent of Brighton playing in Dieppe. That's how far it is.
To be honest, that would have been a nicer trip.
We got there quicker as well.
But I mean, it's true.
Somebody,
I mean,
we get to Norwich.
Yeah.
But it's. I mean, that it's just unfathomable. And
well, the thing is, we've all been, there's so many of us have been on this particular journey. I mean, you know, as Marcus was alluding to, you know, Andy sort of joined it as part way through, and he's obviously a very welcome fan to come along with. But I think, as I've said before. Back in 1997, 2017 just seemed an absolute eon away. If you're talking about what we're going to do, where we're going to be in 20 years' time, you think that's an absolute, you know, it's an epoch away. But if, in 2017, looking back on 1997, it seems like, you know, a 4-minute song ago. It seems to, now that we've done what we've done, it seems to have flown by. Mm-hmm. And when people talk about, you know, it doesn't seem that long ago that we were playing at Gillingham, but when you say 20 years ago, it was, well, it's a generation ago. No, it's the plotted journey that you have to have, and we have had to, it's 20 years is a quick time, because we started when Dick Knight took over. What did he have? He had the ramblings of a squad, a pack of debts which his predecessor had lied about, no confirmed home for the team to play at. A manager who was sort of clearly on his uppers, and he had a bunch of fans who were clearly cheesed off. I mean, that is starting from a long way down. There's obviously a lot of clubs in trouble, like at the moment Charlton, Coventry, Leighton Orient,
Blackpool.
Their owners are really actually going out their way almost to destroy the club through intransigence or incompetence, whatever it might be. But they still have an infrastructure in place. They have a ground in place. They have somewhere to play. They have home. Mm. We didn't have that. We had nothing. Like I say, we had it was a little more than a pickup teams at Preston Park. It wasn't much more than that. That's how far down we were at. And yet, through the hard work and the tenacity, I say that word a lot, but it was, and through the tenacity and through the care and the love and the diligence of so many people, not all of whom have made it on this final journey, to this final part of the journey. Alongside, obviously, Dick Knight, you need a Svengali, you need an operational figure there to have at the top of it. But being no doubt, this is all about the fans. Yes, we thank Dick. Yes, we thank Martin. We thank Tony. But if it hadn't been for the fans at that time caring so much, we wouldn't. You know, the past explains the present, and you can easily plot, you know, the gradual steps that we've gone through. Mm. And so, you know, 20 years ago, that's why 20 years ago seems such a short time ago, because of how much we've achieved in that time.
Marcus, well, I mean, when you think back to 20 years ago, I mean, Al said, it's like a whole country away. I mean, it was everything was completely different. We didn't have mobile phones. There was
the
internet was only just like coming into its infancy, wasn't it?
Yeah, curtains, haircuts, and yeah. Bad rave music that we listened to on the car home from Norwich, and I realised how rubbish it was.
But I mean, when you look at that, I mean, how important is it to you? That we've been on that journey. I mean, obviously, not every club has that that journey to the destination that we've got. So, how important was promotion to you, and to bookend what happened?
It's nice to bring the curtain down on what has been years and years of, frankly, utter rubbish in some respects from what we've actually been through. It has been character building for definite. There's always, you know, there's always light at the end of the tunnel, certainly football wise. Alan's right. I mean, when Dick Knight took over, effectively he had a football club on paper, and that was about it, really. There was nothing else, nothing tangible apart from football shirts and a ragtag squad of players. It probably still hasn't sunk in yet for me, to be fair. I think it will do
in June
summer,
when the fixtures
come out, and then you see that and you think, oh blimey, you know, we are actually in it's still a bit of a whirlwind.
Looking forward to Stoke-on-Trent on a Tuesday night.
Exactly. But for me personally, words can't describe it, which sounds silly, I know, but it's just, you know, from 20 years ago being, how old was I, 24, 25, and you just think, yeah. you know, now 40, odd, you know, and I've got two grown-up daughters almost, and a wife and an ex-wife, so to speak, or now ex-wife, etc., etc. But, you know, so much has happened in those 20 years, as well as the evolution of Brighton Hove Albion Football Club. You know, when my daughter was first born, I put a thing on Facebook about it, that was 18 years ago, and we lost 4-0 at home to Darlington. Home was Gillingham. Home was Gillingham then. Yeah, you know, and then 18 months later, my daughter Kelly was born, and we lost 2-0 at home to Southend, but at least this time it was at with Dean. So, but to put it in context,
so you haven't got any kids that were born at the opening of the Amex?
No, sadly,
not that he knows of.
It's interesting that of all people who've had kids, you know, they might have named their kids either Bobby or even Zamora or after the no one's named their kids Jill or anything like that after Gillingham or anything.
No, exactly.
Andy, you started. I mean, you know, we're teasing you a little bit, but you know, you started sort of, you know, sort of partway through this journey. I mean, you're obviously there at Fans United, but you know, are you feeling the same that you know that we feel? I mean, have you had the bug bitten so much that it hasn't sunk in yet?
Yeah, in a way, it hasn't really properly sunk in. Obviously, my sort of experience, I think after 97, there was so much more fighting to be done that once I was sort of fully on board with the, you know, with the Albion, once I finally sort of fully decamped down from London and took residence, you know, at Rose Ed with Dean. But prior to that, there were still petitions and stuff to get back to Brighton in the first place, to get back to with Dean, which sort of took part in that. And then just like the never-ending battle for Falmer, which is really like my proper starting off point. That's kind of like where I was fully engaged with the struggles, having not been part of like the first phase of the struggle, and it's just all the people that I've seen work so hard to everybody's been working towards, so many people, and it for me this is like, I mean, it's great for me. I'm absolutely delighted, over the moon, and I'm hoping like after next Saturday it'll properly sink in, but it's really for everybody around me that I've seen. It's from like all, you know, all my mates who've all been involved in it, the players that have, you know, made their contributions during the early championships, the fact that they were able to put up with like such rubbish conditions, and the fact that they kept piling on, the fact that we did it all with like very much a shoestring budget, not even a shoestring, where they just did, just like, you know, we're just going around in sandals, more or less, and all with like two hands tied behind our backs, and we still persevered. We struggled. We kept the fight off the pitch going. We kept the fight on the pitch going, and then we finally end up at Falmer, and then Tony spends so much money on the Albion, but he's not wasted it on like ridiculous player wages. He's invested
in seats.
He's invested it in the stadium. He's invested it in the training facilities, in the infrastructure. He's made this team. So when other teams say, "Oh, Brighton have spent their way to this nonsense,"
spend of 4.5 million over the last 3 years.
Tony Bloom has built this club and given it a platform to move on for the next generation of Albion fans, and it really is. I mean, yeah, you sound soppy as a Brighton fan. I'm sure other fans are sick and tired of us banging on about it all the time.
Good we've been lately.
But it really is. You really do genuinely feel that emotion.
Yeah.
And that's what it is to me, really.
There's one thing you also got to throw in. I mean, you know, we've had our quick pricey over the past 20 years. There's one thing that's of interest that other clubs have actually not been able to do, is that we've managed to avoid going bankrupt. We've avoided administration. We've done it as best we can, as fair and as above board as possible. I mean, admittedly, in Dick Knight's days, when the club was at the offices, and I did one or two bits and pieces, and I thought it wasn't a case of when I'm going to get paid, it's if I'm going to get paid. And, you know, so many people did stuff on a voluntary basis or on an underpaid basis or an unpaid basis. That's not a criticism of them. It was just the reality, you know. And I think that probably certain members of the board were kind of embarrassed that they couldn't actually pay the proper way. It's not a criticism of them. It's indicative of the reality of the time, you know. The fact that everyone was so prepared to pull in the same direction and do it for something where they knew that. I think it's indictive of Attila's thing, you know. We're one day when we're storming back a bunch of happy fans without a care, and you know. How on earth did he know that we were going to get this new home? This is written on the day of, you know, the last day of the Goldstone, where our future was so uncertain. And yet, you know, even when you go forward to, you know, Dick Knight was such a charismatic character that you knew full well that somewhere down the line, as Mark has put it, the light at the end of the tunnel was going to be switched on and shining brightly. And, you know, I don't mind not doing, you know, doing the stuff that I did and not getting paid, because ultimately, you know, if you're going to take karma as its as the overriding thing here, we, I, everyone here, everyone out there, everyone who's ever supported Brighton and Hove Albion has now got their reward.
Okay, I mean, as football supporters, though, we were forced to be political, which is not something which it, you.
Well, it's amazing how many of us actually do know about planning laws now.
And articles of association. Okay, well, let's move on. The PFA named their championship side of the week this week, and we had four players in that. It's actually, have you seen the team, guys?
I only saw the four that are up.
But I'll give it to you here. I mean, the defence was, well, it was obviously Stockdale in goal.
Up front.
Was up for services to Norwich City?
Yeah. Defence was Cessignon from Fulham, Lascelles from Newcastle, Lewis Dunk and Bruno. Midfield of Aaron Moy and John Joe Shelby, and with Tom Kearney and Knocker on opposite wings. And then up front, Gale and Chris Wood.
That is actually a bloody good side.
It's a really good side.
That is, I mean, that's team. The one that's chosen by the professionals rather than... Because the previous one was the EPL one was the pundits. Was the writers. That is the professionals one. And I don't think there's probably hardly anyone who could actually complain about any of those players on that list.
No, not at all. I mean, you could possibly say Dale Stevens may have got in there.
Who's in the central midfield?
Shelby and Moy. So,
They're pretty good, though, aren't they?
They are pretty good.
Did you say Kearney's in that as well?
Kearney's there, yeah.
And Stevens hasn't played for the whole season anyway. No. I think that's...
And Gale and Wood up front, so there's no subs. So, I mean, for Bruno to get in there 2 years running as well. He was an old man as well. Yeah, he was the only player that got into the PFA team last year.
Oh, was he? Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go. Oh.
Which shows you how high he's held in other footballers' minds.
Well, you think how many other right backs have we seen that are actually quite good?
fair comment.
How do you think Bruno will fare in the Premier League next season?
Very well. I think he'll be fine. I really do. He'll certainly... he might not play as many games because he's played so many over the last 3-4 years. Blimey. You know, full credit to him. And he's as fit as a fiddle, and he's, you know, lean and mean and, you know, and he'll... But I don't think he'll struggle because it'll suit him technically, because he's a very technical... You know, he's a very skillful footballer, there's no doubt. And he probably... Will he have to do a bit more defending?
Yes,
which would then start to call him into question a little bit. But I don't think he'll have a problem.
Because Bruno first arrived at the club a few years ago, Marcus, you weren't his biggest fan, were you?
Well, only if he's defending. Going forward, he's brilliant. I've never faulted him on that. And when he goes overlapping with Knockart and everything, it's a joy to see.
As soon as he gets past the
halfway line, I'm completely confident. It's the bit between the penalty area and halfway line that worries me sometimes.
Andy, it's those little partnerships that we've got going all over the pitch. Will we see... Stevens and Kyle in tandem in the Premier League next year?
Quite possibly. It's difficult to say. Obviously, Stevens' future is yet to be resolved. Kyle's obviously going to be here. We'll have to wait and see. My gut feeling is that Dale Stevens will be at the club next season. I think we become an attractive option for him again now. So I don't see why not. I can see us strengthening that central midfield area in the summer, but I don't really want to talk about that now because we've still got a little bit more fun to have with this season.
There are an awful lot of people on North Stand chat saying, "What are we going to do here? Where do we need strengthening here? Who's going to get shipped out right now?" Don't care.
Yeah.
You know, well, you do care because you want to make sure that the players themselves are actually sort of, you know, well rewarded, and you know those that are going to leave are going to be sort of go to a good place. But you know, in the great scheme of things, can we just party first and then worry about the mess afterwards?
Yeah. Well, there'll be plenty of opportunities to party in the next week, and there's two events coming up. Firstly, this coming Wednesday at the Comedia, there is the Build a Bonfire Night starring myself, Alan, Attila the Stockbroker.
I love that, starring himself.
Starring.
Steve Grant.
It's MC'd by Attila the Stockbroker. We're going to have readings from Build a Bonfire, Stephen Grant, and then there'll be you and me. All right, starring me and me.
I want top billing. I want the best dressing room.
You might get a beer if you're lucky.
I've got to get lost backstage.
You are, yes.
Hello,
yes,
Brighton.
Spinal Tap, yes.
Yeah,
no, so it's just basically it's going to be a celebration of our fighters. I mean, you know, for anyone who's a Brighton fan really ought to have read Build a Bonfire by now. Especially those who wish to know exactly where it is we came from and where, well, the media, who's, you know, the media's actually spent a lot of its time talking about the 20 years here and saying, you know, if you want to know where we were at, you know, read Build a Bonfire if you haven't done so already. It is a fantastic historical document and absolutely vital and creditable for, you know, understanding the history of the club. And this is kind of just be the stage version of it where we'll, people be reading and we'll be having a couple of guests on the stage where we interview them. And I think Stephen Grant will be doing a bit of a stand-up. And yeah, a couple of other guests. And hopefully, if we can go for maximum tierage, then we think we'd have done our job. Sorry to say, we're advertising this, but it's sold out. So, you know, a bit like every day at the Amex. So,
yeah. So look out on eBay and
via
GoGo.
Touts outside, you know,
there will be touts. Yeah.
Opens up overcoat. There's a load of watches and Braille cream on one side and a load of tickets on the other. No, it's not. Sorry, it's
but,
sold out.
So. Another opportunity to party, of course, is going to be on next Friday, isn't it? At the Pan Zero.
Is it that? No, it's not. It's a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks away. Fifth of May, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Crikey. It is a couple of weeks away, I suppose. Yes. Yes, Friday, 5th of May at the Stadium of Pan in Lewes. Brighton fans against Villa... Villa's on Sunday. Brighton fans against Palace fans. That's them. I just didn't want to have to mention them on air without getting the beat machine out. It's for the annual... Robert E. Memorial Fund Challenge match. Palace are the current holders, so that has to change. I'm not sure who their ringers are at the moment. You know, and Brett was waxing lyrical when I saw him, funnily enough, in a pub not that long ago about who was going to be Brighton's ringer. I can't say, but it would have been just dreamy if he'd
have
turned up.
AJ again?
Hopefully
he's not going to play 90 minutes.
Yeah, if we're going to have a quiet word with the referee about sort of not giving any penalties, you know, if he can be as lenient as the ref last night, then... Renf Challenge match, Friday 5th of May. It's a fiver to get in. All proceeds go to Renf. So if you want to come along and be abusive to Palace fans, then do, and hopefully we can retain the trophy and it'll be part of a fabulous weekend.
Okay. Well, let's talk about last night then. And then we went to Norwich with a chance of securing the title.
We went to Norwich with a hangover. Well, everything else is a footnote. tell us about it, Andy.
Well, it's actually quite a good laugh today. Had a very fun trip up, and nice few nice beers in Norwich, and then we went to the game, and I don't know, it was just a bit odd, really. I mean, I suppose slightly disappointing that we didn't secure the championship last night, but in all honesty, I think that performance was more or less what we expected. It was a great party in the away end. I mean, the atmosphere was fantastic throughout, and you know, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. It was just, you know, just watching the two free goals again this morning. I mean, really, just you know, when are you ever going to see that again? It was just crazy. But you know. Yeah,
shots on target.
We lost 2-0 to a team that couldn't even hit the target.
You can't even say there were goals that were scored with aplomb, can you?
No.
And I will not give Alex Pritchard any credit.
Well, I've got written down here, where is it?
Hang on. We were told on social media last night that you were messing up playing Paul, so you actually got time to write some notes.
Yeah, it's just a bad pool player.
Sorry.
It's like I've got
trying
to
pitch it. We're
doing.
Pitch it to leg.
It's like we're doing anything possible to stop Pilchard from scoring.
Yeah, Pilchard is actually a good name. I like that. Yeah, yeah. It was the thing is, having said that, to be fair, they were reasonable shots, you know, but they were off target, but they were reasonable shots. And yeah, it's just one of those freak things. That said,
if it were to happen once is one thing, but twice in the same game, I mean, is just unheard
that
of.
That said, we were still sort of nailed on for nil. I mean, we were, as an attacking force during the game, I thought we were, well, it was I'm going to say, I mean, under any other circumstances, you'd be quite miffed, but you know, bearing in mind it seems a bit churlish to really criticise them, but as an attacking force, I thought we were so insipid.
I thought first half, you know, I thought we played pretty well. I thought we tailed off towards the end of the game when it was clear that we could have, would still be there now and weren't going to score. Yeah.
Well,
but I mean, Hoonemeyer, you know, we did get a few decent balls in at the beginning. Hoonemeyer had a nice opportunity to score, and Murphy should have got a penalty. So it wasn't, it wasn't a terrible performance from the Albion. I've seen much worse.
Marcus, when you saw the team selections, did you think, well, there's a lot of changing and this Chris is probably not taking it that seriously?
Yeah, I must admit, I was surprised to see Dale on the bench. But maybe he was more hungover than most of the players. And Hemed and Murray up front, surprised in the fact that it wasn't Murray and Hemed up front and they put Murphy in, which kind of says all you need to say about Tuber and the fact that he didn't even, you know, they put Murphy in his position when Hemed's not playing, if that makes sense. Yeah. You know, and sort of the team sort of surprised me but didn't, because they've, you know, it's quite clear they've been on the lash for the last few days. Bit after the Lord Mayor's show, as I was saying before the show, little bit miffed, I think, that at the performance, because we've still got three games left and you want to win the championship now that you've got this far. But maybe am I sounding a bit spoilt by that? I don't know.
We can, of course,
had to take time off work, and because it was a Friday night, and it just, for me, I don't know. After the Lord Mayor's show, definitely
we can actually secure the title though without actually playing now.
Yeah, but also you can't presume that, and you can't also presume we're going to beat Bristol City.
No.
So, you know,
well, they're fighting for their
My whole attitude was be, for, you know, do you want it at Norwich or do you want it at home against Bristol City? And you think, well, I actually prefer it at Norwich. You think, you know, with Chris, be professional, get the job done. Yeah.
But it now means we can't get to the 100 points now as well, doesn't it?
Well, so I think that's, well, yeah, but
who cares about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's face it, we won the third division title at Walsall, but, you know, it wasn't at home, it was at, well, we got the promotion at home. Yeah, but and it didn't matter, we still had a good time. All I would say about Archer was, just getting back to your point, Andy, was, you know, you were having a bit of a party. I was at the Beanback in the Heineken Lounge. What a bunch of miseries in there. Wow. Oh, just moaning about, you know, just how awful Solly March has been all season, and Stockdale's got to go after those two. He let those two goals in. I mean, I'm just.
He did let him in. He scored them.
Yeah,
well, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
I think he scored more away goals than Murray this year. Oh no, or the same amount actually. Yeah. Scored the same amount.
Well, I think Stockdale's back is in line for goal player of the season at Norwich. This is the kind of level of gormless, and they kept walking across the front in order to go to the toilet as well, and you just think, what is wrong with your collective bladders here? Sit down, watch the football, enjoy it. I mean, then, you know, we're all sitting there, you know, there's a whole load of people all looking miserable, and then the camera pans to the away fans and you lot are bouncing, and we're thinking, yeah, we really should have been there, shouldn't we, having a party, even though you're losing. You're singing the songs about losing and you don't care, which we can't repeat on the radio, but it sounds like it looks like you're having a ball, mate.
It was really good fun, because it was like I think everybody was resigned. Certainly we were chatting on the way up, we were thinking, you know what, this game's probably done, because the players have only just got in from the pub, and and so what was there for us to apologise for or be downbeat about? We're still celebrating. It's still a great achievement. And you had, and for Norwich, here's what you could have won.
Yes.
I mean, you know, they didn't even walk away with a bendy bully. You know, it's sort of, it must have been weird for Norwich to see us rub their noses in it. I mean, how could they celebrate those goals with any conviction when really we didn't care? I mean, well, we cared a little bit. But
I assume it was an ironic, he's just too good for you from Norwich fans.
Well, I think they genuinely meant it. We didn't respond with, we've got Knockart, who is the best player in the division.
But I think we were too busy laughing at them singing that. It was very, very funny. And fair play to Norwich fans for a little bit of wit there.
So, okay, if we're talking about sort of like all the celebrations and everything, what we haven't discussed yet is we've talked about our pitch, on pitch celebrations, we've talked about all the things we're doing. What we haven't yet discussed is about the celebration that the players had, and I do raise the point here, it was raised on social media, when a team gets promoted, when in any given club gets promoted, their players will have a celebration. They'll be slightly aloof. They'll be away from the fans. This is what's so brilliant about this club, is that instead of doing that, our players just throw themselves straight into the middle of their fans. Now, who was there? I think that actually we missed a trick here, because we took the bus back from the stadium down into town. Those who took the train would have actually enjoyed themselves having a real party by throwing the players around the carriage.
Well, we were on the train before the players, because so we left the Amex about 8 and got the train down, got the train back into Brighton, which was fabulous, lots of singing, lots of fun, and then got to the pub, and then I basically got a FaceTime from a friend of mine who turned out to be carrying Jiří Skalák down Queen's Road at the time. So I've just got on my phone, like, Skalák's backside as he's being charioted down Queen's Road. It was just absolutely amazing.
Crowd surfing on trains. I mean,
by then I was just too tired to get up and go down and chase them. But I mean, it was absolutely brilliant. The footage of the guys on the train.
Or
I mean,
with
the crowd surfing and Stockdale spraying.
I saw that Norwood got up and was crowd surfing. Who was the first one?
Bulldog.
Was it?
Yeah, Skalák did it as well.
Yeah,
Skalák was probably the best one I've heard.
Oh, and has anyone seen the picture of Skalák in his back garden?
The scarecrow.
Absolutely hat stand up, Logan.
He is joyously hat stand.
Yeah. I mean, for those that haven't seen it, I mean, welcome back from Mars. one, he's standing on a chair in his back garden. He's got a flag in either hand. He's got his own Skalák shirt on back to front.
Which it was what he was wearing the night before. He just got in, I think.
Yeah. It was an Albion flag wrapped round his waist, standing on a chair, looking like he's about to
scare off.
It was a scarecrow, wasn't it? It's hard to tell whether he was steaming or not. Which reminds me, and we're not going to say too much about it, but Antti Knockaert did actually inform everyone outside the Amex that he was steaming. Under any other circumstance, you say, highly unprofessional. In this instance, WTF.
Let rip. They've earned it.
They have, and they've done it with three games to spare. So
Lewis Dunk being paraded around in his black underpants.
Yeah, did you see? His shorts are now on eBay.
I was about to say, he got properly debagged, didn't
he? Yeah, he did. If you look at the... there's like a promotion highlights, celebration highlights thing, you can actually see him
in the crowd.
Let's just talk about Lewis for a bit, because obviously this will probably mean more to him than any of the other players, being that he is Brighton born and bred.
He's the longest serving one at the moment, isn't he?
He is one of our own. So for him to achieve this with his hometown club must be very, very special.
And he's been brilliant. I mean, he's been genuinely high quality player this season. A couple of temperamental slips. I mean, really, he's like his bookings and stuff are more for dissent. But his actual play, I just think he's just one of the most composed centre midfield defenders that I've seen play
he's
for the Albion.
He's going to play for England
easily
next season. I think he will.
I can't help feeling, because I think tomorrow is the players' own end of season awards dinner. I mean, it's the fans that have voted for a player of the season. I don't know who has done it, but I kind of have a feeling it will be Knockaert who wins it, even though I think that on the Raw, the majority... Well, us lot, I think we've said it should be Lewis Dunk. And it just leads me to think, Dunk should have won it 2 years ago when he was leading scorer.
Yeah, should have done.
You know, he's been brilliant this season. You know, one of the things is we've scored the same number of goals roughly as last season, but we've conceded a lot less goals. We concede a lot less, and that's down to actually an improved defence, including his improved performances. Yeah. And you've got to think, assuming that it happens, what on earth does he have to do to be player of the season? Did he have to be properly debagged beyond his underpants just in order that maybe he could have won it?
Well, I voted for him, so he's got my vote.
I suspect it will probably be Knockaert that wins it because obviously he's an absolutely amazing talent. But we've all plotted Lewis Dunk's rise. In fact, including you, AD, there was one time, I think one of his early games, AD, you were pickled when you actually decided to have a good shout at Lewis Dunk by calling him Tommy Elphick. Tommy, would you clear the ball properly or something like that? And everyone was going, no, it's Lewis Dunk.
Oh, right. I remember that.
Yes.
I believe that was I believe that was at Milton Keynes.
We'll remember. We'll remember.
It was
you've
a horrible
been playing cricket with inflatables in the pub garden.
It was a horrible nil-nil
And from there, I mean, obviously with the wobble that he had, you know, off the pitch, but you know, he's managed to maintain and steadily grow his career. He's, you know, he's 25 now. He's not his peak yet. He still has a couple of years to hit his peak. And I think that, you know, playing in the Premier League, if he can put in the performances that, you know, in comparative terms that he's been able to do in the Championship, he will be shown up a little bit more in the Premier League. He's going to be playing against such much higher quality. It's how he's seen to do against that. I mean, there's going to be players in the Premier League that are unplayable and that every defender is going to be criticised, but it's the consistency of his performances. I don't think he'd ever get an England call-up if he's not in the Premier League. But now he will be in the Premier League. I suspect that, yes, I agree. Even if it's not a regular, he'll be in the squad.
He'll be in a squad type situation.
We understand that he has certainly been looked at.
Oh, Christ, everyone's looked at him. I mean, probably the entire Albion squad's been looked at.
If we didn't go up, he'd have been off along with Stevens, who's out of contract. Yeah. There's no question.
Yeah, Dunk was going to play in the Premier League next season, regardless.
Yeah, absolutely.
And David Stockdale, will he be here next season? He's out of contract as well.
I think he will be. I mean, you know, if he's still living in London, there might be the odd tickle from a London club that'll be interested in him. I don't know. But I think that Chris has got some major decisions to make. He's got the difference between the loyalty to certain players, even those who are in contract, but the loyalty to certain players and those where he feels he needs to step up. You know, there's a fine line between giving someone a chance because they were the ones that got us there and needing to improve in given areas. That's probably one of the hardest jobs that a manager... But, hey, that's what they get paid for. Sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong. This is a fellow who has experience, and irrespective of what Norwich fans say, who, let's face it,
he's going to take you straight down. Well, I think, actually, that he stayed up in the first season in Norwich.
He did.
So they're wrong again.
I've got a penalty I got pelted from some Norwich fans after saying that he would have kept them up if they hadn't got rid of him, because by the time he got sacked there, they were 5 points clear.
Yeah.
I think they had a game in hand as well.
I also found his style boring, but actually, you know, what would you trade off boring versus a place in the
Premier
League?
Well, cautious was the word that was used.
Whatever. I mean, we had that issue with Mike Bailey. I mean, let's rewind 35 years ago. You know, Mike Bailey was considered boring and yet took us to the highest ever place in the division. He was building from the back and crowd. I mean, Mike Bamber blamed him for the crowd slumping. Never mind the fact that crowds were slumping all over the country, in the early 80s. Absolutely, No, it wasn't down to Mike Bailey. He was actually building and was got rid of. And, you know, Jimmy Miller came in and crashed, took us straight down.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, Chris has already actually gone on record and said that the players have got some lessons to learn and they've got to get used to, they're going to lose more games
there's not a huge amount of Premier League experience in that squad. You've got Sidwell, I'm assuming he's sticking around, Stockdale's played, Bruno obviously the Spanish equivalent, Rosinha, but other than that, then there's Murray, I suppose that Murray a bit, yeah, but yeah, there's not a huge amount.
Okay, well, that is it. That's all we've got time for this week on our promotion winning Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
We're going to have a championship winner on next week, aren't we?
Yeah, there may well be Fizz next week, I think. If we win the title, that would be amazing.
Maybe some Hophead of Attila's in.
But thank you too, of course, Alan Wares, to Marcus Hancocks, to Andy Bass. I'm Andy Packham, and I'm into something good.
she told.